I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
Warning, Check the Locks podcast is a true crime podcast and may contain graphic descriptions of violence, murder, sexual assault, and more. Check the Locks podcast is not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome back to Check the Locks podcast. As always, I'm John Connor.
I'm Olivia Cornu.
Saying thank you for joining us this week as we dive into yet another truly terrifying true crime case. In fact, a truly terrifying Halloween true crime case. But before we get started, as always, Olivia, my friend, how are you? How are you doing today?
I mean, we could go on about what this week's been like, but I think it would take a whole episode in itself. But we had a scare on Friday, had a little dog attack. Eleanor's doing okay, but very scary, and we are all bandaged up and our bruises are healing. And then to top it off, I went and saw Taylor Swift, so I kind of made a bad day into a good day. Not a Swiftie, but I have a newfound respect for the Swiftie Nation, if that's what you want to call it. And the show was amazing. It was, like, hands down, a really good show.
Well, that is awesome. I was telling Kara, I saw a video about how the stage opens up and she like dives into the stage appears in it. And I was like, I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan, but we might need to go just to see how awesome the show is. But I am super sorry about Eleanor. You sent me those pictures. I was at a kid's Halloween party. I was like, that's the scariest thing I've seen. And I'm at a Halloween party. So I'm glad that she is doing okay. And you guys are recovering. All right. I did want to share for the listeners out there. I didn't mean to spook anybody. I did go to the emergency room. That's why we didn't have a short on time on Monday. Had an issue with some blood pressure that I didn't know was high. It's under control. Everything is good. No need to freak out there. But just want to let you know, because a lot of people were concerned in the Facebook group. So appreciate you. And want to make sure that we are hitting the big stuff because it's Halloween, baby. I'm super excited. Mm-hmm. We have a very special guest, our recurring guest. This is our third year on Check the Locks podcasting on Halloween. 5 years total for myself and this guest. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the wonderful, the awesome, the author, Pieces of You, Jessica Gomez. Thank you for coming back. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. Hello. Thank you guys for having me again.
Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for sitting and just listening while we did our little catch up there. I'm sorry about just keeping you hanging there, but super excited to have you. I am always pumped when you are on the show. You bring some incredible cases. So it's just so good. Again, the book is out. We've been talking about it. We've been pumping it up. I will tell you, I have no shame in my game. I am working my way through the second chapter because I have ADD so bad I can barely read. But I really like the first chapter and I really like where I'm at in the second. So I'm excited to see. Yes, I know I told you before, but my wife has offered to literally have me lay in bed and read it out loud to me, which I think I'm going to take her up on because, again, it's every book, but reading is just very hard for me. But I'm super excited to get through it. I'm super excited to have you. Before we get into everything, how has everything been with you? How has your year been? I know Halloween is a super busy time for you. How has everything been going?
It's been good. It's been crazy. You know, releasing the book obviously has been a lot of work, but, you know, it's been really incredible having this thing I've worked for so many years on come out, and people are responding well to it and people are buying it. So I am really appreciative of that. It's doing really well. It just came out October 1st and I've had a lot of sales and I'm very fortunate for that. So I don't know that I would release another book in October because it is such a busy month as it is. And then on top of it, to release the book, I know I had a party when I on my release day, and then just with all the marketing and everything like that, it's a lot. But yeah, it's been really cool.
Well, I am so happy that the response and, you know, people have been picking up the book. And I know a lot of people in our Facebook group, I know when we posted it was out, a lot of people were like, I got my copy, and some people are already finished with it. And so it's just, I don't know. I think we've talked about it before off mic, but like when you do something creative like that, where you really pour a lot of yourself into it, you're worried about how it's going to be received once it's into the world, you know?
Right.
And I know, you know, just from knowing you, how hard you've been working on this, and it's been like a labor of love for like literal years. So I'm just super excited that it's going well, and that I wanted so badly to be at the launch party. I think the next book that you write, I'm saving a vacation day just to be like, I'm going to Michigan for the launch party. But I felt honored just to get an invite at all. So I'm just, again, so happy that it is going well and so happy that you're here. And again, this is my favorite time of the year. I say it all the time. And I think having you on the podcast and coming to hang out is one of the many reasons that this is my favorite time of year. So thank you so much for coming to do it.
Thank you. Yeah, I always love coming. I have such a good time. And yeah, I'm very happy that you guys will have me back every year.
Of course. For as long as we have Halloween's, the way the world's going, I don't know.
Yeah. This could be the last one. Jessica Gomez will be here.
For sure. Well, what do you say? The gang is all here. Should we just jump into it? Quit the Gabby Gabby, get to the Stabby Stabby. Do you feel like jumping in the case, Jessica?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
On Halloween night in 2004, roommates and friends Lauren M. I'm not going to say her last name. She prefers it is not used. A 27-year-old poli sci major and volleyball coach, Adrian Insogna, a 26-year-old civil engineer, and 26-year-old Leslie Mazzara, a Southern Belle beauty queen working at Francis Ford Coppola's winery, passed out Halloween candy at their 3-bedroom Napa Valley home on Dorset Street, watched some TV, and retreated to bed around 11 p.m. Adrian and Leslie slept in separate bedrooms upstairs, and Lauren slept downstairs. A quiet evening at home was upended just a few short hours later. Around 1:30 a.m., Lauren's dog barked and a light went on. She assumed it may be a late-night visitor for Leslie, who had had a man over before. After drifting back to sleep around 2 a.m., Lauren was awakened to loud sounds upstairs, including Adrian shouting, "Oh God, please no." Lauren fled out to the backyard and froze while listening. She then heard an intruder run down the stairs and, instead of going out a door, climbed out of a window on the ground floor. She never saw his face. She went back inside and upstairs, slipping on something as she entered Adrian's room. There she found Leslie and Adrian with multiple stab wounds, bleeding profusely, and what she had slipped on was blood. She called 911, but by the time the police arrived, both of her roommates were dead, and there were no signs of sexual assault or theft. So this immediately reminded me of the Moscow murders in Idaho.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
Yeah, it was so similar, where there was this case of these roommates who were all murdered and there was no sexual assault. And it was just it seemed like a really random attack. But yeah, a lot of similarities.
Mm-hmm.
I also read an unconfirmed report that when Lauren called 911, they initially hung up on her because they thought that it was a prank call. So I don't know if that actually happened or not, because that was not in an official report, but very sad if true, because they were still alive when she went up there, at least one of them was. But by the time the medics arrived and everything, they had both deceased.
I mean, I hope that's not true, but I can definitely see it happening, especially with it being on Halloween. You know, it again shouldn't happen, but I'm sure the police get like thousands of prank calls, you know, in cities all over the country every year on Halloween.
Yeah. And I listened to a little bit of the call, and she was in shock. She was not, you know, screaming really, you know, kind of when you're watching like a horror movie or something and someone happens upon this horrific scene, you're expecting the 911 call to be like someone who's completely frantic, but she really sounded like she was in shock. And so they might have just thought, okay, this is not real. Like, obviously they did think that, which that's, they probably should have done a little bit more vetting before they decided right. that, because obviously she was telling the truth. But yeah, very, just really sad and unfortunate all the way around.
Yeah. It's strange. Like, we passed a pretty bad wreck on I-24 here over the weekend. And like, it looked like somebody really got hurt. And we were driving past and it really didn't click how bad it was until we're a couple miles down the road. Cause you're just looking at it. You're like, oh man, like, whoo, that'd be rough. And then you're a couple miles down. You're like, oh yeah, that person's probably not with us anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it takes a second to sink in. Your brain's just processing. So
right.
I can imagine if you're woken up from a dead sleep, hearing your roommate scream and you see someone run out of your house, you're probably petrified.
Yeah. I can't even imagine just seeing anyone like that. But in your own home where two of your friends have just been brutally stabbed multiple times. And it's like you're woken up in the middle of the night. You're probably disoriented as it is. And then you come across this horror scene, which is exactly how she described it. She said it literally felt like she was in a horror movie because she walked in and there was just blood everywhere and she slipped on the blood. It sounded like it was really terrifying.
Very traumatizing as well.
Yes, you know? Definitely.
I mean, just going through what I went through on Friday, it's nothing like coming home to my roommates being murdered, but I just remember just being in shock. Like, not like a, you know, so like catatonic shock, but I just remember the neighbors being like, are you okay? And I'm like, I have no idea. I have no idea what just happened. I have no idea. So I don't want to imagine, and I can't only imagine, but I'm sure you would just be like, what is this real? Is this real? Like, is this real life? This is real blood. And those are my roommates.
Your brain kind of has to catch up
to what's happening and what you're seeing.
For sure.
So according to Leslie's obituary, she was a member of the Greenville Ballet Company. She attended the South Carolina Governor's School for the Arts. She was a 2003 graduate of the University of Georgia with a BA degree in philosophy. And while at Georgia, she was a member of the lacrosse team and the karate club. She competed in the 2003 Miss South Carolina pageant after being crowned Miss Williamson in 2002. And according to Adrienne's obituary, she was a student athlete, a Girl Scout troop leader, an officer in the Society for Civil Engineers. And in Napa, she played volleyball, softball, and volunteered for numerous charitable activities. So these are two very busy women. They're very community oriented, very involved in their community. So I can only imagine like what a shock this was, because, you know, Napa's wine country, it's very nice there. These kinds of things don't really happen there. And then you have these two young women who are really just starting out their lives and, you know, all for nothing. So.
Yeah. And it seems like by all accounts, like they're, you know, pretty stand up people, you know, so I'm interested to see where this goes, because, you know, again, when I found it, I was like, when I saw this, I was like, I think this would be a great one for Jessica. And like, as I was going through, I didn't really read much on it, but I was like, oh, this looks crazy. So I'm really interested to find out kind of the same thing with the Idaho murders, right? Like, where did the connection come from?
Yeah.
Because especially when, you know, you're a beauty queen pageant winner, like you're in some kind of spotlight, you know what I mean? When you're involved in all these, you know, charities and you're doing these different events, you're meeting all sorts of different people. So I'm really interested to see where it goes and how it ends up. Cause it's just, I don't know. It's just so tragic right off the jump.
Yeah. So Leslie, the beauty queen, was dating two people at the time of her murder, and past boyfriends from years prior were still reaching out to her through email. She was described as someone who had a big effect on people, and she was often given lavish gifts such as vacations and even a car from potential suitors. Her college ex-boyfriend had created a website about Leslie after they'd broken up, and on the night of the murder, another ex-boyfriend's father had called her twice, information that made one of her friends deeply uncomfortable when they learned it, because Leslie had previously talked about him calling her so much that she had to stop answering the phone. So a lot of creeps in this woman's life.
I'm just trying to figure out, these women are young. Like, why would an ex's father be calling her multiple times? Like, that's just bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like he had an infatuation with her because she had, I think that was part of the reason she had broken it off with her ex-boyfriend, is because the dad was creeping her out.
A creep?
Yeah. So, I mean, when you've got boyfriends who are emailing you from 5 years ago and you've got another ex who has made basically a shrine website to you, I mean, just no shortage of suspects to me, because any of these guys could be, you know, off the rocker enough to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if anybody has those same problems, it's definitely me. And so
I thought so.
No, but that's kind of what I'm saying, right? Like, you're a beauty queen. Like, you're in that spotlight. I don't know. I have met certain women in my life who, for some reason, attract that kind of attention from guys, mm-hmm. where it's like, yeah, this person is like never gotten over you. Know people who are married with kids, and this person specifically that I'm thinking of could call them and be like, hey, you want to get back together? And they would be like, yes, I no longer have a wife, children, you know, anything like right. that, right? So it's, you know, it's weird how some people become so infatuated with others. So I think that kind of hits the mark to what I was thinking. It was like, I'm sure there's a lot of people that were very interested in this young lady.
Right. So two of Leslie's friends thought something was weird about one of the two men that she was dating, and that he seemed overly jealous. So they relayed the information to police, and the police did collect DNA evidence from that man that she was dating, but he was not a match to the crime scene. So there was a detective named Todd Shulman who said, the blood evidence really speaks volumes. You're able to start to get a picture in your mind of where these girls were and how they fought back the last moments of their life. He noted the blood evidence was also found in the blinds of a window in the house. Also of note were multiple cigarette butts on the property because none of the roommates smoked. The brand was new and unusual, and it was called Camel Turkish Gold. So this detective was convinced the killer knew his target and where she slept. And it was thought Leslie was the killer's likely target, the beauty queen, and that she was the first victim and that she was probably attacked while sleeping. It was largely believed that Adrian heard her friend cry out for help and was attacked when she went to go help her. Adrian's best friend, Lily, said that signs of a hard-fought struggle were evident on her body at her funeral, with bruises and cuts on her hands. And she was buried in a turtleneck, which was something that both her friend Lily and her mom had noted was unusual because she hated turtlenecks, but they kind of had to do it because of all the bruising and the evidence of a struggle, basically. So rumors ran rampant, with some even suggesting that the murders could have been a mob hit because of the victims' Italian last names. But then the police soon arrived at the doorstep of Christian Lee, Adrian's on-again, off-again boyfriend who lived just a block away from them. Things had been strained between he and Adrian, but Christian maintained that he had not seen Adrian the night of the murder. He submitted DNA, and his DNA was also not a match. In all, detectives ran samples from over 200 men, and none were a match. For months, no one knew who had committed this heinous crime, and Lauren had to deal with the extreme anxiety, not only of finding her friends, but knowing that the killer was still out there. So that would be so terrifying to me, because you don't know what the motive was. You don't know if you were going to be an intended target, but then he got spooked by something. So not only did you just lose two of your friends and you found them, but now you don't even know who did it. And so, you know, she had done some interviews where she had talked about how she had trouble sleeping and she had extreme anxiety. And it's just really awful to think about.
I couldn't imagine being in that situation. You know, I would just have to tell the police, like, I'm not in this city. I'm staying away. I'm not here. You can FaceTime me. You can email me. You can call me when you want. But I don't think I would ever sleep. I definitely wouldn't be home alone.
No.
Like, I think that I would just literally walk around like a zombie, because you don't know who it is. You don't know if they're watching you all the time. Are they sitting outside your car? I mean, outside your house in a car. I think the paranoia would get to me so bad that I'd be like, I can't be here.
It really reminds me of, just being 100% honest, as you were going through and describing everything, it reminds me of Scream 2, where they're on the college campus, you know what I mean? Mm. And you know, this girl, her friends are just, and you don't know who it is or where they are or who it could be. So as you were going through, I like was seeing that kind of thing in my mind, right? Like, you're just walking around campus being like, it could be any one of you. Could be someone I've met 100 times, you know? So I don't know. To Olivia's point, I think I would just be so unsettled. It'd be very hard to trust anybody. You know what I mean? Like, even your friends, I'd be like, I don't know. Like, you knew where I lived, you know, you've been to my house, you probably know or looked at ways you could get in and out and stuff like that. I think it'd be very, very hard to say, like, for sure, especially if you were a female and it was a male friend, to be like,
right,
I can rule you out for sure, you know?
I feel like there's no choice but to spiral, because you lived through it and you have to deal with it. There's no way around it. It happened and you don't know who did it, but it happened. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what she did after. I don't know if she went and stayed with family or what she decided to do, but I can't imagine ever wanting to be alone ever again. And then, really, do you even feel safe when you're alone anyway? Because she wasn't alone when this happened.
Right. Yeah. It's like, it doesn't matter if I have roommates. You always have that false sense of security.
Yeah.
When someone else is in your home. Like, anytime, like, my family's here staying, I'm like, oh, I can sleep a little bit better because somebody else is going to hear the criminal come in.
No, I totally agree with you, Olivia. It's, you know, when you're home and there's other people there, you know, I know sometimes if I've had to travel for work or something like that, Kara's like, you know, make sure that the alarm's all set and everything like that. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, we're kind of just as vulnerable, even if we're there together, because we're both pass out. You know what I mean? Like, we've got the security alarm and everything like that. But the other thing that was really sticking out to me too, as we talk about this, is like, I don't know if we'll get into it or not, but just kind of thinking about the years and years of like intense therapy that you would need to get over something like this. And like, the survivor's guilt and things of that nature.
That's like, what I was going to say. Survivor's guilt. That's the word.
But Sorry. It's just, it's like, I don't know. I would have a really hard time getting my head around, like, what was it about me? Why did the universe say, like, you're still here and your two friends aren't? You know, that I think be a hard question to answer.
Yeah, yep. I agree. So Adrian's friend Lily went on 48 Hours and did an interview about just her friend Adrian, and describing, she had talked about how Adrian had a near-death accident previously and how they had celebrated the 10-year anniversary of that. So she kind of was just talking about her friendship, and she said that she and her fiance, Eric, were originally planning on getting married on November 1st, which is the day that Adrian ended up dying. And she said, if we had gone through with that wedding, it was planned in Hawaii. Adrian and Lauren would have been in Hawaii with us that week. It's something that haunts me. I can imagine just, you know, seeing that interview and just her sitting there saying, this, all of this would have been avoided or could have been avoided if I hadn't postponed my wedding.
Yeah, it's more of that survivor skills. Like, why did I, you know, why did I make this? This one decision that I made has now cost someone I care about to no longer be with us. And it's like, you know, realistically, and when you think about it logically, it's like, obviously none of this is your fault, but it's just that, like, if I would have done that one thing differently, you know, they'd still be here. And I, to me, that would be the bitch to try to deal with, you know what I mean? Just being like, oh man, how do I process that? It'd be very hard.
Yeah, I agree.
So this friend, Lily, noted that someone must have noticed something and that someone must have a suspicion about who could be responsible. And she mentioned that, you know, you must have noticed someone had cuts on their hands. You must have noticed some bruises, kind of as a plea to the public. So months later, the crime lab results arrived, and the saliva on the cigarette butts found on the property matched the killer's DNA collected at the crime scene. Advanced technology and DNA testing revealed that the smoker was a white male with light-colored hair and light-colored eyes. And when this information became public, Eric's parents found suicide notes from him in their mail. So this friend, Lily, who was on 48 Hours, her fiance sends suicide notes to his parents. And I don't know if he confessed in there, but he must have alluded to having something to do with the murders, because he came into the station at the urging of a family member. And the way that they put it, they didn't exactly call it a confession, but basically he said enough that they were kind of saying, this is basically a confession.
Like, hypothetically, if I would have done this kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, this is 11 months that went by before they knew who did this. And basically what happened was he got nervous once that DNA information came out, because I think the police did not give a whole lot of information to the public throughout this case. And then once they got that saliva DNA information and they started talking about what the murderer looked like, he got really, really anxious and then decided to mail these suicide notes, which I don't know if that was actually a real suicide note, because I don't know that you would mail it and then they have time to talk to you and kind of bring you into the police station. I can't imagine that that was more than like a half-hearted like cry for help or something like that. I don't think it was him actually going to do it.
I think it was just like a ploy.
I don't know what it was, but I feel like, why mail it? Or, I mean, I guess he could have put it in the mailbox. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It seems a little strange to me.
Yeah.
Part of me wonders if it was like, again, this is just speculation. I don't know shit. I'm not a smart man, but like I said, I'm working my way through chapter two of your book. So, but to me, it would be like, I'm going to send this suicide note and then you're not going to find me anywhere. Like, I'm gone.
Like, you think he was going to take off and then act like he had killed himself.
Yeah. And I, like, in my brain, I'm like, well, I wonder if maybe like that was his plan, but they got to him a little bit sooner, you know? And then, I don't know. It just, that's the only thing behind mailing it that makes sense to me, where it's like, if I do mail it, it takes a couple of days for them to get it. They get it. They open it up. They come looking for me. I'm gone. Like, so. Yeah,
because he could have left it, you know, on his table and his parents would have gotten it. So,
right.
Yeah, an interesting choice.
Yeah.
So after they found the notes and he talked to the police arrested Eric Koppel, the 26-year-old husband of Adrian's best friend, Lily. So they did end up getting married. They got married after he murdered the two women.
So he did do it. It's confirmed.
Yeah. Can you imagine being that woman and being like, oh, I'm sorry, my husband did what?
He was in the background of, he was at the 48-hour interview where she was talking about someone must know something. Did you notice something? And so I thought, I mean, did you notice something? And that's why you're saying, like, I don't know. But then they married each other after. So she must have been secure enough at that point. And it was really sick because they had Adrian's mom like read a passage at the wedding.
Well, and if I heard you correctly, the day that she was murdered was supposed to be their original wedding day, right? So this guy like was like, well, I'm not getting married today. I guess I'll go kill someone or two people.
Yeah. And they, what's really frustrating about this is he would not really give a motive. There was some speculation on Reddit about, like, you know, gossip around town type thing, that basically Adrian had found something out and had caused Lily to postpone the wedding. And then he was so upset that this is kind of what forced him into this mental break or something like that. Because the only information that we have is that in the early morning hours of what would have been his wedding day, he said he grabbed a knife from his house and somehow ended up on Dorset Street, which is where the house was. He claims to not remember how he got there, and he even said that his eyes were closed while he committed the murders, which really doesn't track with what Lily herself said about all the defense wounds.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue one last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue one last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue one last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue one last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
So did, my question is did Lily notice if he had scratches? Like, did she say, like, oh, he came home after that and was acting bizarre? Or, you know, like, what did he look like when he went home?
If she did say it, I don't think it's been made public, because this case went on for almost a year until they linked that DNA to the blood in the house from the cigarette butts. And I don't think they ever had released the brand of the cigarettes.
Like, that would be a dead giveaway. Who smokes Camel, Turkish, whatever?
Right. It was like Turkish Gold or something like that.
John, is that what you smoke?
I did smoke those back in the day, actually. Shout out Nate Booze, dude. He's listening. I know Jessica knows him, but yeah, that was that back in the day. We used to smoke them Camel Turkish. We would smoke the golds and the silvers.
Wow.
We're fancy.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, I wonder if they had released that information, if someone would have thought, well, hang on a second, doesn't this guy,
I wouldn't trust anybody
who knows them. Yeah, well, he knows them. He was there like celebrating with them when they moved into that house.
Right.
So really all that's known about him is that he was a quiet guy, kind of shy. I don't think anyone knew a whole lot about him. But I know that he had 11 months to feel bad and confess, and he didn't until he knew that his day was coming. So it's not like, you know, 2 weeks later, I can't live with myself anymore. It's, I am about to get caught.
Yeah. And it's weird because when we're talking about the evidence, it does remind me a lot of the Idaho case and Brian Koenig, because a lot of the feedback was very similar. The public was really mad because the police weren't putting anything out there. And then all of a sudden they were like, we got our suspect. We know who he is. Not only do we have him, but we arrested him in another state. So it's like, they're not putting a lot out. The community is like, what is going on? Especially with something like this, where it takes 11 months. Like, can you imagine living somewhere? It's a small community. And for 11 months, you're like, there's somebody out here killing people. Somebody killed two people I know. And, you know, the police aren't doing anything about it. It, oh man, like, it feels like it would have like the vibe of like a Stephen King novel, where just the whole town is like, feels eerie and heavy and weird. Yeah, you know what I mean?
A little on edge. You're just on edge and you just don't know who it could be. And that's the thing that makes it so unsettling for anyone. And I talk about it a lot, being a single young girl, you know, it's a hard world out there. And I wouldn't be able to be young and have this person, I guess, do we have a serial killer on the loose, or is it, you know, just this wrong place at wrong time, or is it a personal attack? And until you know who it is, I'm sure that's very scary.
Yeah, I'm sure that they would be waiting. Like, if I was the cops, I'd be like, well, there are going to be more bodies that turn up, because if it just seems, you know, I imagine running DNA on 200 men and you're like, it could be anybody.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're just waiting to see if we've done enough of these episodes where it's like, you're trying to figure out who it is, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're dumped 2-3 more bodies. So, you know, the community was probably super on edge, super stressed, but I can imagine the police are like, we got to find who this guy is, because we may have a clock we're running against. We don't even know.
I do wonder if they were a little too set on their theory of this being someone who was in Leslie's orbit rather than Adrian's, because if they're focused on, okay, this woman has a lot of men who are interested in her, there's a lot of creeps in this woman's life, like, understandably, I would have probably thought that too.
Yeah.
But if you're focused on the wrong, you know, initial person, and I mean, I still don't even know if maybe she was the intended target. Maybe she's the one who had something to say. There's really no telling, because he never gave a motive. So if they're focused on the wrong thing, you know, if you're going to sample DNA from over 200 men and one of the men that you did not sample is someone who sees them on a somewhat regular basis, that kind of tells me they just weren't completely going in a different direction.
Yeah, you had the blinders on.
I would swab any man that had any encounter with any of these women in the last however long, you know?
Yeah, anyone who's been to the house, anyone who knows they sleep upstairs, like anybody.
And if you're innocent, you have no reason not to give your DNA.
Right.
Yeah, I just want to know, because like you said, with the defensive wounds and everything like that, like, there's no way he just came home and was like,
look just normal, like,
I'm
no
going to
deal.
Bed, you know what I mean?
I mean, you still haven't watched Mr. Brooks, the movie that I talk about,
like, but Kevin Costner movie looks, you've been talking about for like 4 years. No, I haven't watched it yet.
He goes home after murdering these people and he's pristine and he's got a whole system he does. But I don't think Eric's probably that smart.
Sophisticated? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it like, I don't know. And I think it would be hard too, because it's like, well, you're acting weird. And it's like, yeah, because somebody we know just got murdered. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're someone who could do something like that in that situation, I think it'd be easy to play off as well, you know, but it's the defensive wound aspect where I'm like, well, because if they found his blood there, he was bleeding somewhere, you know what I mean? Unless he just didn't go home first, but I don't know.
Well, I don't know that he lived with Lily at the time. So if he was living by himself and they got into a fight, you know, he said he was drunk. They got into a fight about he felt like his relationship with her was slipping away. He blamed Adrian. And that's really all the information that we have. So if he did go home and then didn't see her for a couple days, then yeah. I guess it's, you know, it's possible.
I punched the wall because I love you, girl. Like that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You could come up with a different story. Oh, I was out trimming the hedges or.
Right.
Yeah, I got scratches from whatever, you know.
That's a good.
The car.
That's a good call out, because in my head, I was just automatically assuming like, oh, you're getting married. You probably live together.
Probably live together. Yeah. I'm like, you didn't go home to Lily. She didn't see what you looked like. Guilty all over your face.
Yeah. Or even just knowing that he left the house in the middle of the night and then came
home.
What's
his alibi?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So he was, they did a plea deal and it was really just to spare the family of a trial. So he did get life in prison without the possibility of parole, and he just avoided the death penalty. So that was the plea deal. So they must have had, I mean, they had the DNA evidence, they had his, you know, quasi confession. It must have just been like a really solid case for them, for him to have taken that plea deal.
You know, that doesn't seem like much of a deal. I feel like usually the plea deals are like, oh, you might get to be paroled in 35 years, but still you have a chance. There's
right.
A chance.
Yeah. And what year was this? I'm sorry.
The murders happened in 2004, and then he was sentenced in January 2007.
Okay. So I believe by that time, California had already suspended the death penalty there anyway. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I think the thing that always frustrates me, because we've run into a lot of these doing the show too, where it's like you take a plea deal and then just like you said, you never get to hear why. You never get to hear the prosecution's argument. You never get to hear the defense.
Right.
You're just saying, I'm guilty. I did it. Sentence me. But, you know, for the family, for Lily, you don't. And I mean, you know, maybe things happen behind closed doors, but like you don't get the this is why I did what I did, you know, and I feel like that would be. Especially, you know, thinking about Adrian's parents and things like that, like. Being, I'm sure you feel the same way, Jessica, but like being a parent, you're like, if anybody ever like hurt my kid, like I would want to know, like, what made you do this? You know what I mean? And so,
yeah, well, because you're left wondering. And I feel like I don't think anything is ever going to ease that pain or anything like that. But I do think that the not knowing can be really challenging. About a lot of different things, and something like this where your child was brutally murdered and then the guy is just like, oh, I just thought I was losing my fiance. And then like, that's the full explanation. Like,
yeah.
I'd be like, well, let me have a crack at this guy.
If you weren't losing her, you just did. You lost her because you murdered her friends.
Yeah. You lost a whole lot more than that too, bud. You know what I mean? Like,
right. So Adrian's mom addressed him at a sentencing and she said, Eric, you knew Adrian. You know me. And Eric, I know you. You are a man who violently stabbed to death the best friend of the woman you loved. That is not love, Eric. You cannot love Lily and bring a knife into Adrian's home and stab her again and again and again and again and again and again and yet again. So just really, I felt like that was a really powerful statement that she made. I'm glad she got to address him, but I mean, just totally senseless all the way around. And then Lily spoke and said, "I wish with all my heart these events had been avoided. Eric, there is nothing you could do to make me love you any less. These words are just as true today as they were on that afternoon."
So she's joking, right?
I was shocked when I read that, because not only did your fiance kill two people, he killed your best friend.
And you're saying there's nothing you can do that would make me love you any less.
Like, is this the time to be taught? Like, if you want to say something crazy like that, say it to him when you guys are talking, when he is behind bars. You don't
we'll see Lily and Eric on Life After Lockup.
Jeez.
I was like, it made me rethink the whole thing. I was like, when did she know? You know, like, it's a little bit crazy to me that someone who just found this out, who had Adrian's mother speak at her wedding, has this best friend from high school. Years and years they knew each other. And then he goes into her house to murder her. And then this is your response.
I want to ask you this. Have you watched, I think it's called Into the Fire on Netflix?
No.
Okay. Mm-mm. Soon as we're done, as soon as we get off here, you need to watch it. It happens right outside of Holland, Michigan.
Oh.
But it's this documentary about this woman who put her child up for adoption. And then with her adopted family, the child ends up going missing. And the maternal mother finds out about it like years later and finds the person that is responsible for it. And it's a crazy story, but the woman, I don't want to give too much away for people who haven't watched it, but the woman of the person who did it is the same, like, "I love you. And if you just confess, we'll be in a prison. You can be in a prison near home and we can still have some kind of life. And me and our daughter can come still visit you. I love you no matter what." And it makes me wonder, like, what kind of person, because we know Eric is capable of killing these two young women, right? Yeah. What kind of person was he at home in that relationship? You know, was it like some kind of like Stockholm syndrome situation where, like, was he again, speculation, but like, it makes me wonder, was he abusive to her? Was she kind of like, you know, "Oh, I love you no matter what, kind of like brainwashed, you know what I'm saying? Because that's the only way to me that saying something like that in a trial for your best friend's murder in front of your best friend's parents makes sense.
And the mom
sense.
Just said, they say he stabbed her again and again and again and again and yet again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you get up there and say, "You can do no wrong, Eric." What?
Yeah. I think to me, it's just like, he's obviously got this violence in him somewhere.
Yeah.
And usually something like this probably isn't, you know, you don't go from like being, "I'm a normal dude," to hacking, you know, two women to death just out of nowhere.
Right.
So I'm sure that there was some behavior before that. And that's like I said, I don't know for sure, but that's really the only thing that can make sense to me.
He had said that he was depressed and, you know, basically this depression manifested itself as rage. And I'm not saying that can't happen. And I know in men that is how depression can manifest itself, but that is not just a depressed person. Like, you don't murder someone because you're mad, because you think that your fiance is being influenced by them. That's not an appropriate response, right? So I don't know. I don't know that a person could be quote unquote normal at home all the time and then just out of nowhere kills two people brutally and then goes about his life. And they did get married. And so I don't know if he attended both of their funerals.
Yeah.
So this is not a guy who's feeling super bad, in my opinion, not about what he's done, because he did not seem to take issue until he thought that they were going to get him.
Yeah. He's like, I'm like, here.
How do you sit at these funerals?
I know.
And just know that you're the reason everyone is here mourning these two young, bright, brilliant women.
Yeah.
And you're just sitting there like no big deal with Lily and probably hugging on their mothers and, mm-hmm. you know, just consoling these people who have dealt with such tragic loss. Like, just sickening. This didn't just start here.
No.
And this is, I mean, we've done enough of these to know, like, this is like classic behavior. You know, that's like a getting off thing when you're like, I'm here. They're all sad. They're crying. Yeah. I'm hugging the mom. They have no idea it was me. Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised at all if you went back to that house repeatedly after. Just like, you know, like that's a straight up, like, I don't know. It's like a weird, like, kink fetish thing for a lot of these. Yeah. Where it's just, it does something to them to be like, all these, you know, I'm standing right in front of all these people and they have no idea it's me, you know? And it's like, oh, it's gross. This is gross to think about. Ugh.
Yeah. And it's just so senseless. And it's like, this isn't even someone these women had around, you know? It was like the boyfriend of, or the fiance of a friend who she clearly saw something was up with him and was like, hey, maybe you should kick this guy to the curb. You know, like, yeah. These two women were not hanging out with this guy on a regular basis, I don't think. So I want to know how well they knew each other. And I wish I wish we had a motive, because I think it goes a little deeper than he thought. That one was having an influence on his fiance wanting to postpone the marriage.
Yeah. Well, it makes me wonder if she had dirt on him. Like, you know, yeah. Like I said, he doesn't sound like he's an upstanding guy. So, no. You know, if he was out messing around or something like that, or I don't know, it could be anything, but it has to be something. If he's like, I was worried that she was going to take my fiance away from me. There's got to be, you know, yeah, something
more to
that
the story.
And it sucks because we just don't get it, you know. And I know, like I said, I know
that.
Yeah, it's frustrating for us. So I can imagine, you know, how frustrating it is for the families of the victims. Yeah.
I don't know if Eric and Lily are still married. I would be interested to know.
Life after lockup.
Hold on. It's worth a Google.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about. Like, this was 20 years ago now. So what's happened in the interim? It would be interesting to know. But yeah, that's the sad case this week of just something that was completely like off the wall. None of these murders have any reason to happen, but this, just without any real motive, this just seemed like really off the wall.
It was definitely a good case. It really reminded me when you started and it was like the young girls and the roommates and they were just murdered and attacked. Definitely the Idaho murders, which since we brought that up, like there's nothing going on with those cases right now that we know of, I don't think.
They've had some objections about like where the trial venue is being held. I think that's one where it's going to be a while before it actually goes like a trial because the defense is trying like everything they can.
Yeah. anyways, but that's what this case really reminded me of, was like there's this random attack, which now we know it's not so random because he knows them and he had an intimate type relationship with the young ladies, but just so devastating. And again, I say this a lot on the with the cases we do, it's just a lot of young lives that haven't got to experience life in the world because they were taken too soon. And it's just devastating. And then to know that someone that you just trust, it's the trust for me. Like, they obviously trust him to an extent. They're best friend is married to them or was married to him. And it's just like, you just let those people in with like open arms, like, come on into my house, the place that you feel safe.
Right.
And for him to be able just to attack them, there's got to be other behaviors that we didn't hear about or see that he has shown in his past of anger and rage. And this couldn't have been just like a one-off. Maybe his first time to murder somebody, but definitely not a one-off for bad behavior, I wouldn't think.
I do wonder if he planned this or not, because the way that he explained it was that it was not planned. You know, he just grabbed a knife and he doesn't know how he ended up there and it's the middle of the night. But I mean, you could make the argument that, oh, he did have a mental breakdown because it was the day he was supposed to get married. But I don't know. They found a lot of cigarette butts outside, which kind of suggested that the person was kind of trying to work their nerve up.
Courage up.
Yeah. To go do it. Yeah. And, you know, he had time to be like, this is not what I should be doing.
So the whole facade of like, I was blacked out, my eyes were closed, yeah. I don't know. It's like, well, you smoked a whole pack of cigarettes out there, right, my friend.
Yeah, probably amping yourself up, you know. And I did say before we jump into the Deadbolt test, because what I found just doing a quick Google search, it does look like Lily moved out of the Napa area. And apparently there's nothing confirming 100% that they're still together or divorced, but it looks like she's listed on like socials and all that stuff under her maiden name. So I would imagine, I mean, if they're going away for life, even if you were like, I love you, I'm sure after a certain amount of time passed, you would probably be like,
you're not getting out. There ain't no point in keeping this relationship. We can be pen pals.
Right. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, we can definitely jump into Deadbolt test. Let's start with you, Olivia. Where are you putting it at?
I'm going to go with a 9. It's the false sense of security for me. It's letting someone you know and you trust in your home and they come in and just murder you for no reason. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. What about y'all?
Go ahead, Jess.
For me, this is a 9 because I think that I have a really good perception of people, and I think that I can kind of see through people somewhat easily once I've met them a few times. But that does not protect me once I've already met them a few times, right? So if I see you and you're, you know, a significant other of someone in my life, and I think something's not quite right, I don't, you know, want to see this person anymore, that's not going to stop you from doing something. You know what I mean?
Right.
So just because I may raise alarm bells or I may just choose not to see this person anymore, that doesn't mean that I'm, you know, quote unquote safe. So, I mean, every time I research these cases and I just read through all the crazy shit that happens, I'm like, oh my God, there are so many crazy people out there that it makes me uncomfortable to think about it.
Yeah, dude.
You know, they could be living next door to you. Like,
yeah,
they don't have to be in a different. They're right there. They're right. Walking the streets.
This
with
isn't
you.
Like, you You're know, one person them. Does this a year or something. Like, this yeah. is one case on one day where there's multiple cases happening in a day. Mm-hmm. So that's why I put it as a 9, because this guy was a creep, and the reason for, you know, or at least the reason that he gave was so minute that it was like, really, you're gonna stab two women to death over this? Like, that's really shocking.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny that you say that, because, you know, I know this is your third one, right? And when you're like, you know, I research these cases, I realize like how many terrible people. I'm like, yeah, this is our 118th right. episode of a full episode. And then we've done 97. So we've done, you know, 300 of these. And I feel like that at the end of every single one of them, where I'm just like, oh, there's so many disgusting people. I keep myself saying by saying statistics, right? And like, I'm just searching for like the standout in the statistics, right? Like,
yeah.
But it's still just like, oh, there are actual monsters that just walk, yeah. like we walk past them every single day and you have no
every day.
Idea. Yeah, it's terrifying. First and foremost, both of you, I don't know what's wrong with you. I'm putting this at a 10, 110%. Home invasions are the most frightening thing to me. Like,
Those are your yes. fears. That
and children like are going to yeah. be high for me every single time. But like the whole time you're going through it, we have a friend who just had a baby. We went and visited them, saw the baby, and I've met her, her husband probably like 3 times. And so like the whole time I'm like, he could come kill me.
Yeah.
I barely know him. You know what I mean? Like,
but you know, it's true. Think about how many acquaintances you've had in your life, and probably so one many. Of them's a creep in some way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh mm-hmm. yeah, for sure. And you know, I know people that I, you know, have run across their path and have, you know, known in social circles. And
you lived across the street from a murderer.
That is true. Yeah. I lived across the street from a kid who cut somebody's head off. But like, you know, another guy that I used to see at parties all the time, he got somebody was like, yeah, like he's in jail. He sexually assaulted someone at one of those parties. Oh, so it's, you know, you never know who you can know people really well and still not know them.
Right.
You know, we've talked a lot about that with like, you know, the spouses who kill each other and stuff like that. It's like, you should be able to be like,
just be a single cat lady.
Yeah, works for sure.
Till that home invasion comes.
Right. They're like, we can't kill her. It's too sad. She's just here with her cats.
The cat's sleeping right by her head. This isn't going to work out.
But, you know, I don't know. And then also I think and maybe it's because, you know, I have a daughter, but just whenever we do these kind of cases too, it's like, my kid is going to go to college someday. My mm-hmm. kid is going to move away from home. And then I have this fear of like, they're going to move. And then in my head, 365 days, 24 hours a day is just going to be, hey, remember that one case you did? Hey, remember that other mm-hmm. case you did? Remember you did that podcast for like 12 years and yeah. like every all bad
the
murders thing
and all the yeah. kids and all the things and the young college girls and
right. So it's okay,
you'll always be the father. I'm still parented at 35 years old. I'm sure y'all might be too, but my mom's like, get home, the weather's bad. Did you lock your door?
Oh, I didn't text my mom when I went to the emergency room this weekend because I was like,
shame on you.
Well, but you know, I didn't want to like freak anybody out. I didn't really know what was going on, you know, but it was the same thing. She's like, I'm your mother. Like you
I'm
text
first
me you,
on the list.
You let me know what's going on. I was like, I drove myself, Kara. I was like, Kara wasn't even there with me for like, she got there for like the last 45 minutes. I was there for like 6 hours. Like, I'm good. But it's just, I don't know, man, this kind of thing is scary to me on multiple levels. So I don't know, maybe I'm surprised I have the higher one, but I'm definitely putting it at a 10 for sure.
I'll give it a 9.5. 9.5, 10.
Listen, do I'm not, you bully me. You're like, really? Is that
really, that's it?
That's it?
You don't want to go higher? This case and that's all you're going to give me?
No. So no, you stay at your 9. I'm fine at the 10. I have no problem saying this one gets under my skin. But I think I was the same way with the Idaho murders too, where it's just like, when you're home and you're sleeping in your bed, that's where you're supposed to be safe.
Right.
And when somebody takes that from you, it is terrifying. It's just, yeah.
Why can't
wrap
people just
my head
kill people
it?
In broad daylight? You know, then our fears of like night and all that would just go away, you know? Why is it got to be at bedtime?
Yeah, but then you'd be terrified to go outside during the day. It would just
flip-flop. At least I can see
him
coming.
Just like, never get any sun, be all pale. Well, that is where we fall in the deadbolt test for this week's episode. Olivia, Jessica, both coming in at a 9. I am coming in at a 10. But as always, we want to hear from the listeners, the locksmiths. Where does the murder of Leslie Mazzara and Adrian and Sagna fall on your deadbolt test? You can let us know. Reach out to us on Instagram at Check the Locks Pod. You can find us on Twitter at Check the Locks. And if you're not in our Facebook group, what the heck are you doing? Come hang out with us. We would love to get to know you, spend some time with you. I say it all the time. It really is the best place on the internet. Also, you can come hang out with myself and Olivia and Jessica. We're all in the Facebook group kicking it. So we would absolutely love to have you come be a part of that community. And Olivia, Jessica, obviously this was a very good case, but as always, you know, when we do something heavy like this, especially something that is so familiar to something like the Idaho murders, right? Because then you're just thinking about two terrible sets of murders. I got to have a palate cleanser, something to clear out the taste buds. Olivia, do you have a podcast review, a Spotify comment? What do you got?
This week we have a Spotify comment from Ash, and it's on the about the Chandra Brown case. And that's the case where he talked her into killing herself, and she was under the pretense that he was going to kill himself as well after she did it. But Ash said, thank you so much for covering this. I was a friend of hers, and this whole thing broke my heart. So, wow, Ash, I'm sorry that you went through that and that you lost a friend of yours. But the case was devastating, I thought, for sure.
Yeah, that was the suicide, or the supposed suicide pact one. And, you know, Ash, first of all, thank you so much for listening and for taking the time to, you know, share your feedback on the episode. And also, we're sorry for your loss. I know, you know, that couldn't have been easy for you. And you know, your hearts just go out to you, but we really do appreciate you leaving that comment and engaging with us. It really does mean a lot. So appreciate you very, very much. And Olivia, this week we had the Spotify comment. We absolutely love those as well. And we also love to have those reviews. So if somebody wants to leave us a 5-star review, what's the best way to do that?
They need to go to the Apple Podcast app, go to our show's homepage, scroll down where you see all 5 of those stars, light them all up, and leave us a little bit of love and tell us what you think about the podcast.
That's right. And Olivia always says it best, so that I don't have to. Apple Podcasts, click those stars. These reviews, they mean so much to us. They help new listeners find the show. They get us in other shows' suggestions. And again, really just help us to build our family. And that's really all that we're looking to do, right? Just get in front of new listeners and build our community. So if you have not left us a 5-star review, click the link in the description of the episode that you're listening to now. If you have, just know that we appreciate you so very much. And before we go into anything else, Jessica, Pieces of You is available now. Where can people find you? Where can they buy the book? Let them know.
So you can go to my website at writerjessicagomez.com. You can sign up for my newsletter there. You can follow me. I have a Facebook page now. So you can go to Writer Jessica Gomez there. You can go to Writer Jessica Gomez on Instagram. I'm flirting with the idea of getting a TikTok.
Ooh.
Yeah. So we'll see. I was trying to avoid it, but I think that's just the... that's the world we live in now. So
it's the world we live in.
Yeah. So I'm gonna have to join there, and I really don't mind like making a fool of myself on video. So that's fine with me. But yeah, you can get the book on my website. You can get it from bookshop.org and support independent bookstores. You can get it from Amazon, Barnes and Noble. There's a few independent bookstores that carry it in store. There's a couple that do online. So if you want to support your own independent bookstore, you can ask them to order it and they can order it for you. So yeah, really anywhere you like to buy books, it's available.
I was so excited that it's on Goodreads. So I was able to put it on my Goodreads and like track my progress.
Yes. Yep. Like, oh. Yeah. Same for me about the reviews, by the way, because it's, I mean, we're all just in an algorithm world now. So Every time that you leave a review, it helps more people see it, shows up. So really for any books that you like, you know, just try and support the authors and leave a review.
1,000,000%. And definitely I have 2 copies. So, you know, I have the one that you gave me. At this one, I will cherish forever. You wrote something very, very nice inside, and I will always hold this very dear to my heart. And then I have my one that, you know, I gotta support the homie and buy it when it comes out. You know,
I know I bought three, and then you did the thing where you could buy the autographed ones, and I was like, oh, I don't need more. But
I think I'm gonna do another one of those drops soon. But I only do it for whatever stock I have on hand. So I do very limited quantity. So that's where it helps to be signed up for the newsletter.
Also, true story, 110%. So first of all, you wrote something very kind in the front of my book. Just kind of melted me a little bit. But then I got home and I'm looking through it, and you'd mentioned us in the acknowledgments as well.
Yeah.
And I straight up like
acknowledgments.
Yeah. Like 2-3 tears just like coming up. I was like, that is the sweetest fuck thing.
I haven't read that. That's in the back.
Yeah.
In the back.
That's yeah.
He went to the back. He made it to the acknowledgments.
He read it all the way to the end.
I was just scrolling through. I was like, oh, that's you got your lovely picture in the back for the about the author. You know, I was just going through. And right, I was like,
when this makes it to the big screen, don't forget about us for your premiere.
Oh, yeah.
It only takes one novel.
I would love for it to become a movie. So I think maybe I'll work on a screenplay.
Yes, please do. All right. Quick question. Since it is Halloween, we love horror films, right?
Yes.
Pieces of You becomes a book tomorrow.
A movie?
Movie.
Yes. Or yes. It is a book I'm holding in my hands.
It's already a book.
Yeah, it is a book. I've got Pieces of You becomes a movie tomorrow. Who are you dream casting as Nora?
I have thought about this. The person that I feel like would be so great for it, but wouldn't fit the age is Amy Adams. But Nora's in her 20s. I mean, she looks really good. So I guess maybe she could, but
yeah, Amy Adams looks real good. You know what I'm saying? So.
This is off the beaten path, but my old landlord from Iowa, she wrote a book called Night Bitch.
Oh,
and it
has
been picked up by Amy Adams.
Yes.
I used to rent her house.
Oh my gosh. Right, really?
That was my landlord for 4 years.
Wow.
I was like, what? So I have that book I need to read too. It's on my dresser.
And I have somebody for Erica too. I don't even know if you guys have gotten to Erica yet, but Nora's best friend, Erica, I envision Shay Mitchell. I have loved her since Pretty Little Liars, and I feel like she would be amazing in that role. So if anybody out there is listening, like, think about
Shay
it.
Mitchell, Amy Adams.
Yeah. Got ourselves a nice little cast here.
I know. I feel like I'm like moving up on like the literature world. I know two authors.
Oh, Shay Mitchell.
That's very cool.
Was she in, You by any chance?
Yes, she was.
Yep. Okay. She was in the first season of You, right?
Yep.
This girl was?
Yeah.
I think her name was Peaches.
Yeah. She's kind of like the snobby, like best friend in that. And if it makes you feel any better, Jessica, I'm only like halfway through the first chapter of Night Bitch. So I made it double in this one. Oh, man. But I'm just, like I said, I'm just so happy for you. I feel so, I've known you for years. I know how hard, you know, when you're doing the horror blog, I know how much effort you put into that and how thoughtful you are, you know. And a lot of times, especially with horror films, right, like they can be silly and people don't always take them that seriously. And as somebody who loves them, I've always loved your writing there. And then to see, again, just something you've been putting so much love in. I've talked to you when you were doing rewrites and, you know, all of that. And so to see it like here where you can hold it, have more than one copy of it, it's awesome. So I'm so happy for you. I'm so glad it's out in the world and so glad that people are loving it.
Thank you.
And the cover's great. Like, we're not even talking about the aesthetic of it. It just looks like a good, solid novel. And as someone who's just one of those people, it's like, oh, this looks kind of interesting. Because I love all, like, thriller mystery books. Like, if you give me these frou-frou love stories, not for me. Unless there's a twist and someone's getting murdered or something.
that's how I feel.
So I'm like, even just, like, looking at the book, I'm like, oh, I would pick this up if this was just, like, if I was in Barnes & Noble just perusing and trying to decide, I'm like, oh, I'm going to just buy that one and read that one just because of how it looks. It just looks like a good book.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We'll get our 5-star review in as soon as we get them finished. We'll challenge each other. I'll hold him accountable.
I will do it right now. The first chapter is awesome.
Well, John, I think your wife is maybe the first person who finished it when it was in physical form, because mm-hmm. I had a couple of my friends read it, but that was like when it was, you know, a document. But once I got the actual books printed, I know you said she like stole it from you.
I feel like started reading it right read away. It for a long time. Like I feel like Kara's read it.
Her her brain, she was like, I'm trying to develop healthy habits. Like I need to read more and stuff like that. I was like, sweet, let me get you like 4 books. Right. Like, I'll just like, here you go. And like 3 days later, she was like, I'm done. And I was like, what the, like, how does your brain, like, I watch Millie doing these like sight words and stuff. I'm like, yep, that's how it is. Like, was Nora, like, because my brain hates me so much. But yeah, she ripped through it. And I know she was like, I believe she sent you like something afterward, didn't she?
Where she was, she sent me a really nice message afterward. And I think she was like, I can't believe that came out of your brain.
Well, and it's funny too, because she normally this like thrillers and anything
she
like
doesn't even like our podcast.
No, she listens every once in a while to support, but she's like, I can't do that. So like, not only did she love it, but she loved it. And it's like outside of anything that she would normally ever read. So,
yeah.
So I'm going to have her read it to me. I'm going to lay in bed.
I don't get
the audio version going.
I know. Well, until I get an audio version, Kara's going to have to do it for you.
Dude, if you had an audio version, I would have listened to this thing 4 times by now. I just put it in headphones. It's the reading part that I'm just like, I wish I knew how to do this. I wish I knew how to read. So
you'll get through it eventually.
Back in the day. Yeah.
Well, again, just thank you so much for being here. And
yes,
again, just love you, dude. We love having you on. We love everything that you do, and just again, feel so honored to be able to, you know, call you part of the Check the Locks family, and just can't wait till next Halloween to have you back again.
Yes. Thank you guys so much for allowing me to come on and letting me present a case. And I always have so much fun chatting with you guys and doing this as our little tradition. So I really appreciate it.
No. And thank you for doing it. I messaged you. I was like, hey, if you just want to come like hang out, I know you just like, you know, put a book out release. And you've been doing all this stuff.
And you were like, writing.
Yeah, you're like, hell no, son. I'm bringing the case. I was like, all right, cool. Let's do it.
Yeah, well, I love it. It's nice. It's nice to take a little break and just listen to someone else do the work. And right. It's always so good. And I feel like it makes it more commentary when there's 3 of us and we're just, you know, talking and having different perspectives. So it definitely adds a fun touch to the podcast.
100%. Yeah. Thank you so much for doing it again. Really appreciate it more than I could tell you. And before we go, as always, if you want to financially support the show, you could do it on Patreon, but I'm going to say this. Don't worry about Patreon. Go buy a copy of Pieces of You, writerjessicagomez.com. Join the Patreon later. Buy the book, right? We would love to see that money go towards you having a copy of this book. It's got pages. It's a book. It's got words. So Kara made fun of me because I made that video. I was like, you see this book? It's a good book. It's got pages. It's got words.
You don't even look right holding the book. You should have read it in the ER last night.
Part of the reason is I've been reading it like this. Yeah, like, these words don't make sense.
It's upside down.
Visual joke, audio medium. So, but yeah, don't worry about the Patreon. Buy a copy of Pieces of You, writerjessicagomez.com. And if you can't afford to do that, tell somebody about the book. Let them know it's out there. Hey, go buy the book. Check it out. Author is really awesome. She's on this podcast that I like. Get the word out. Let's get this things on the New York Times bestseller list. So let's do it. Support Jessica Gomez.
support independent artists. It really does mean a whole lot to those artists and to what they're trying to do. So that is all that we have for you this week's case, but please make sure that you're subscribed to Check the Locks on your favorite podcast app so that you never miss an episode. We will see you again next week with another truly terrifying true crime case. But until then, don't forget to
check the locks.
See you next week.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.